I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I feel good today, guys.
Yeah, me too, actually. Nice sleep last night, feeling very rested.
Yeah, well, I feel good just because, basically, I feel like I just, when I walk down the street, I feel like...
Where are you going with this?
Well, no, I just feel like I'm on point with, like, comedy a lot of the time, so I'm making a lot of people laugh.
In what sense are you making them laugh?
Awkwardly or...
No, not awkward.
At you?
No, not awkwardly at all. I just feel like...
I mean, the backwards cap's pretty awkward.
It's not awkward at all. It's just, it makes me look jock-like. Yeah, I'm like an American jock.
It also covers up your receder, you know?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sort of details of our lives. Join me, as always, is Tom and Francis. Hi, boys.
Ah,
hi, boys.
You got top billing there, Tom.
Yeah, finally.
You do. Yeah, you're getting ahead of the game. It's probably because you're on my right. That's why.
We'll go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. You're my right hand man right here, and you're my left hand man.
Well, yeah. Right.
But do you know what, boys?
I'll get over it, I'm sure.
But it's true, right? So listen, this is how I look at things. I'm really kind of excited.
How do you look at things?
Well, I'm kind of excited today because basically, like I've been saying, that I feel like a lot of the time we're all making people laugh, especially our listeners. I feel like we kind of like make people laugh and things like that.
In different ways, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, in different ways.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited today because actually we have a proper comedian coming on the show.
What do you mean by proper?
Well, I don't think that we are kind of... I don't know. We're not professional comedians. Do you? Can you be a professional comedian?
No, I'm not describing myself as a professional comedian. But I guess that's what you're saying, is that he gets paid to be funny.
What's the definition of a comedian? Tom, what do you think?
Someone who can make people laugh.
Yeah, but are they...
Should I Google it?
Do they need to be paid? Do you need to be a comedian to be paid? Is it like if you're a...
What do you mean, comedian or comedian?
Comedian. If you're a comedian, does that mean you have to be paid? Or can anyone be a comedian?
So. Anyone can be a comedian.
No, I mean... A comedian or comic is a person who seeks to entertain an audience by making them laugh. It's as simple as that, folks.
Okay, so we're...
So actually, we are comedians.
Technically comedians.
Yeah.
But our guest today is a professional comedian, right?
Well, no, but we kind of... I suppose we do make some money from this, so technically speaking.
What, you're making money from this?
You're getting paid.
Oh yeah, guys, actually, sorry, I probably should share that with
you. Are you serious? You're getting paid for all this?
I thought it was like pro bono or something.
What
this
hell?
Might be through jokes or amusing situations.
Don't change
or,
the subject.
Or acting foolish or employing prop comedy. You employ a lot of prop comedy with your face, don't you?
But do you know who we have on today? I'm really excited.
Who do we have on, Jamie?
We have
Ross Kemp.
Ross Kemp?
What? Ross Where did that come from?
Oh, sorry, Russell Kane. Sorry,
yeah, he's R&R. We have Russell Kane on.
That's
Russell
cool.
Kane. He's actually like the opposite of Ross Kemp, isn't he?
What do you mean the opposite?
Well, Ross Kemp's not a comedian and he's...
Bald and
quite aggressive. Quite stocky, yeah.
And Russell Kane is funny.
None of those things. Skinny and he's got more hair.
Do you think you would be... do you think you'd be a good stand-up comedian? What do you think it takes to be a stand-up comedian?
I haven't got whatever it is, that's for sure.
Well, you've never tried.
True.
So what would you think? We think it's stage presence? Confidence?
Yeah.
Do you need to be funny to be a comedian?
Well, it helps with that, I'd imagine.
It does. I don't know where that came from. Well, I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's a way of writing, right? Knowing how to set up a joke with a premise and then have a punchline, right? It's a skill which you can get better at. Which is actually why I think a lot of comedians, they actually start doing comedy later on in life, right? Because they hone their craft, you know, on the side as a hobby and then they reveal it to the public.
Yeah, I think you're right. Speaking of which, like, I love the idea of, like, because I listened to that podcast, Tom, that you love called The Horn Selection.
The Horn Section.
Isn't it?
It's amazing.
It's really good. To all of our listeners, if you want to go and check it out, it's really funny. It's called The Horn Section.
It is good.
It's very funny. And what they do, and they always have a guest on, and so they had, like, Jesse Ware. So they talk about all their
Jesse Ware one was really funny.
Funny. They talk about their favourite JWs. So if we were going to think of our favourite RKs, who are your favourite RKs?
In Ross Kemp.
Ross Kemp. Yeah. Roman Kemp.
Roman.
Just the Kemp family in general.
The Kemp family in general.
All the Kemps.
What about, what other RKs are in this world? Robin.
What?
What?
Robin Kate.
What?
Is that not a Robin Kate? What's Robin's surname from Batman and Robin?
Richard Curtis. Richard. Oh, no, that's a C.
I'm just really excited because I feel like, you know, we do this podcast and people come up to us on the streets and they listen to it and they say how funny it is. But we now have someone who's telling us if we're actually funny or not.
He's going to completely show us up because he's going to be actually funny.
Do you think he is?
Yeah.
Well, speak for yourself, Tom.
Okay, well, should we find out?
Sure.
Okay, welcome to the table, Russell Kane.
So are we going over a beat or are we just dry?
We're just going to get dry. Yeah.
Because of your outfit, you look like you're going to start rapping.
Russell Kane, everybody.
Let alone the rest of your crew over here.
Yeah, well.
Is he packing?
This is our entourage. If we were an entourage and we were walking... So say you're walking down the street in Essex, right? Yeah, you're walking down the street in Essex. And you saw us walking towards you. Would you not be terrified?
Yeah, I'd say that's really going to ruin my shoes when I kick them in.
I feel like us as an entourage, I feel like if all four of us were an entourage, we'd be the weirdest entourage.
Fucking like weirdest group of people.
Yeah, quite a motley
it's
crew.
It's like all the different things that can go wrong in a barber's is represented around this table.
This is the point where you think, as you know, in terms of your hair, hair is actually quite thick and strong. All of our other hairs, we're all receding here, but you've got quite a strong head of hair.
Well, some of the apart from the beard wearer, hair is proceeding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going here but growing here.
Well, I mean, I'm not losing hair, I'm gaining face. That's how I look like to look at it as you.
Yeah, you are gaining face, which is a good thing.
I'm cheating slightly, though. My hair is part of a larger condition, which is a good one. It's a condition girls would love to have. Is I have a collagen imbalance.
Oh, really?
It only has a couple of negatives. I've got a benign type called... is type 1, which has never been diagnosed, by the way. Please don't mess with my life insurance. So I've got sort of a slightly...
Stretches. Oh, you've got elasticy skin.
Wow. Which means...
You've got extra collagen in your joints as well. So
which is the dangerous bit.
Oh, really?
I've got flat feet as well.
Can you put your legs behind your head?
I was used to be able to do absurdly stretchy things, but the rest of the body that doesn't have that excess stretchiness, it's dangerous to do it.
So you could have been a contortionist.
I could have done, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I have, like, two hairs where you should have one in the follicles. I have to soak my nails before I... I cut them thick hair. Wow. Not the correct amount of wrinkles I should have.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah, but you don't. You look very young for your age,
it's,
right?
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
But that's this is where I actually had. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it. So I was in the hairdresser the other day, right? And they kind of came over to me and said, "Hey, we've got like a beauty section in the back." And I was like, okay, this sounds awesome. So I went into the beauty section in the back, and they had these injections which inject you with natural collagen.
Mm. Right.
Are you pretending like they came up to you and offered you this?
I was like, please stop doing it. Oh, my God. And then they started a hand job, and it was all really inappropriate. But I was like, bro, stop. Oh, my God, I'm on a plane to Thailand. What's happening?
But Russell,
you finished off his story for me.
But this is the thing, dude, right? So we're going to basically, what we do at Private Parts, right? We basically interview and ask you about your entire life. And I suppose with you, right, you are one of these people who are kind of, without knowing it, you are pretty particular about what you eat, what you train, all those kind of things, right?
I guess so, yeah. I don't like spend my life on apps or counting calories or anything. But I do. I get a lot of my calories from fat. So if I do any sort of type of eating, I suppose I eat a lot more fat than the next guy. So yeah. I have a lot of butter in my diet, a lot of avocados.
You don't
nuts,
eat butter. You lie.
I have butter in my coffee before I go on.
Bulletproof.
Yeah, I have like a tablespoon of butter and a tablespoon of MCT oil before I go on stage. Well, MCT oil is just like a posh coconut oil.
Right.
300, 400 calories of fat and caffeine.
Yeah.
Bang. Do a corporate mortgage cancelled. I'm just kidding. I haven't got any balances on my houses.
Yeah, but I swear to God, you don't eat sugar. So butter has sugar in it, right? So you wouldn't eat. Doesn't butter?
Doesn't
no, it doesn't. Yeah, it does. Butter
what
has butter sugar.
Welcome to Biology with Jamie.
Butter has sugar in it, 100%. Does it not?
No.
Natural sugar.
It's the opposite. Sugar is like the most pure carbohydrate you can think of, the most refined pure carbohydrate. And butter is a fat.
Okay.
It's a saturated fat. So fat, carbohydrate, protein, they're the three food groups you want to be eating as much as you can from the first two, unless you've hit a massive workout, and then by all means, go carb-tastic after that workout.
I just don't believe this, because if I ever eat like lower pack or something like that...
What's lower pack?
Lower pack.
It's the name of the smaller residence past his house. Just take it down to lower pack. They do some sugar to be delivered for the biscuits.
It's true. Lower pack is one of the best inventions ever to be made in the whole world. Okay, it's spreadable butter. Spreadable butter is the best thing to... I bet. Are you one of the people who keep your butter, like you get your like...
In whatever, a butter dish.
Yeah, do you keep it outside the fridge?
Yes. Temperature.
Yeah, obviously.
You weirdos. Who does that?
Because it's actually pretty safe. And in fact, when I was doing the comic relief documentary in Uganda and Kenya, I took a pack of butter in Tupperware. It lasted.
Because you can't get butter out in Africa yet.
Well,
no, well, not really.
We weren't going to shops. We were staying in hostels and stuff. So I in my pack, as it were, I had my butter there. So whenever we were doing a piece to camera, I could hit the bulletproof coffee.
I did exactly the same thing, because you couldn't. I lived out in the bush in Ghana for 3 years, and you couldn't get butter out there because there weren't really any cows, and so you couldn't really get normal butter. So I had to buy butter in the capital and bring it with me
in
my backpack.
Yeah, it keeps
fine.
I mean, I feel okay. Well, I don't know about that, but I suppose we're going to start, Russell, from the beginning from you, right? Because you grew up in Essex, didn't you?
Yeah, my dad was from Barking in Essex, which we now call it London, and my mum was from Enfield, which is also now London, but culturally very much both. It's right on the border of Essex, Hertfordshire, and London.
And where did they meet?
They met at, what was it called? The Treetops Nightclub. Epping. So my dad was a doorman. Because my dad was a proper bodybuilding, steroid-taking, right-wing metal welding, lifeguard, rugby union playing.
One of the boys.
Lump of Essex meat.
Like us.
And then he had me, you know, Liza Minnelli for a son.
So when you come out and you go, hello, and then he was just like, what the hell is going on?
Correct. So I'm the opposite to... My dad's deceased ages ago, but I'm like a carbon copy of my mum. It's like I've been cloned from my mother without the perm.
Vagina, presumably.
No, sadly not. No, I have a minge.
Just the perm.
I have a minge. It's well hidden.
Actually, one of the funniest things Russell's ever said to you, because Russell and I have done loads of different things together, and the the funniest thing I still remember to this day is when we were at like this Channel 4 event, and I walk up to Russell and I, we arrived early for some reason. We're the only people there, and you were with your wife, and Russell walks up to me and goes, can I introduce you to my wife? Walk over to his wife and went, this is my beard.
That's what I'm so used to people thinking I'm gay that in the end, I wrote it into the stand-up act. When I first started stand-up, where I come from, like a like a small council estate where, you know, I always had a girlfriend, so it never really came up. So I didn't realise that when people are meeting me fresh, the impression is that I'm a gay man. It was news to me.
Right.
But of course, the more stuff I did on telly and the more stuff I did, and when the adrenaline's going, I tend to be even more animated.
This must resonate with you, Jamie.
Yeah.
I'm not that camp. I told you, I'm pretty like alpha male and pretty... I'm not.
It's a smaller continuum with posh people anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, true. Posh people aren't always camp, are they?
No, but they're often gay. At least during the often part of their education, the early part. It's your turn to address as Agamemnon.
But do you think people? but do you think Russell, when you do your stand up and things like that, do you think you step into a certain character? Because a lot of comedians, so it's you as a person.
I feel like now sitting here talking to you. Okay, I'm obviously sat down. I'm a little bit calmer, but there's not a massive gap between, like, you could hand me a microphone now and there was a small audience, there wouldn't be that much gap between what would happen when I went through there, apart with a bit more energy.
Yeah, but it's so true, because you're like a different comedian, because I always had this thing, and probably boys you'll agree with this, I always had this thing that when someone told me that comedians are people who leave the room and say, I wish I had said that when they're not in the room. Yeah. But with you, you're just naturally very funny.
I think there's two types. There's the really talented writers.
There's
the guys who just, when they hit the stage, total personality drops. Yeah. Yeah. And they're just amazing. And
who would you say would fall into that category?
It's probably half and half.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, I don't know if you've ever met Jimmy Carr. He's pretty the same off stage. If you're having a conversation with Jimmy, he's the same. He's exactly the same. And then you'll meet someone like Stuart Lee, for example, who off stage is relatively jovial, like friendly, giggly. And then he goes on stage and is this really deadpan, cold intellectual persona, which is nothing like what he is. We went out for a drink. He's so different.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways. You get some guys that put on a still demeanour on stage. Milton Jones is another one. He does one-liners and he's got his hair standing on end. He's a bit sort of like he's been lobotomised, but really sort of a gentle, giggling, lovely,
it's
warm
like,
man.
It's true. There's that guy that I met the other day, this Indian guy who, he's a comedian, and he like boils eggs on stage in like kettles. Have you seen this?
No.
And it's
sure he's a comedian?
Yeah, he's a comedian. His whole persona is like...
Were you stoned and watching the Cooking Channel?
Dude, this is so fucking funny. I was telling a story the other day. The only time I smoked weed ever, it was, I told this the other day, but the worst thing ever, I smoked weed and my friend scared me. My housemate scared me. He was so paranoid, he scared me. And every single time for 4 hours after that, I was constantly terrified that people were going to jump out and scare me. So I haven't smoked.
Oh, you had a bad experience on weed.
I had a bad experience in weed. It was the worst thing in the world.
We're in Herbal Hill, guys.
But listen, so in terms of that, but you're even different to that, because like you said, a lot of people like funny naturally, and a lot of people are kind of controlled funny, but your brain almost works faster than your mouth does.
We've been backstage a few times, say, right, yeah, or whatever, and I have to tone it down in the the dressing room, just because I think people sometimes think, oh my God, how exhausting is always like performing just because he's on telly. Whereas the reality is, that is what I was like long before I did any of this stuff for a living. And in fact, I've gone the other way since I started this. So before I started stand-up, I used to be first one up dancing at a wedding. When we went to a restaurant, I'd be the one saying lots of silly jokes with the waiter.
Yeah.
First one flirting with the waitress. Now I can't do any of that because everyone's like, oh, wanker, yeah, off the telly showing off.
Yeah, so it's on a role reversal.
So it's made you
tone my personality down, whereas my natural personality is to show off when I'm out with my friends.
But do you not find that some of your best jokes come from just when you're talking with other people, you know,
they all come.
Yeah,
from
exactly.
That.
Yeah. So,
if you were to see,
is that not detrimental to then become more, reclusive?
Well, I'm still having
or introverted.
They come from experiences mostly. Yeah. And when I'm in very small groups, i.e., I'm with Lindsay and my family, that I'm still the same. So I'm the same at home.
Yeah.
Bouncing off the walls. If I'm out with my family, but if we're out and there's members of the public around, and the music comes on, the old me would have been, first one up dancing, first one flirting.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, I don't want to be a hashtag by the end of the night. Someone spoke to me, his ears have been entered by your words.
But
I have
this problem where I think, maybe you're the same, Russell, where I feel like I always have to be centre of attention. If I'm not centre of attention, it actually kind of makes me feel a bit, I don't quite like it, because I think that's my personality. I've always been the person to always, when I was in Berlin.
You're an attention seeker. Is
attention seeker, but when I was in Berlin, right, I went to Berlin for New Year's, I got naked on the table just because it was putting me, people were daring me to get naked, so I'll go and do it.
No one was daring you to get naked, were they?
Well, I dared myself and then people went with it.
Were you there with friends? I'll tell you when it changes for me, though. I don't know if it's the same for you. Like when I'm the new guy and it's a big important thing and there's lots of other people like me who are on telly, I tend to stay quiet for the first bit of the evening.
Yeah, the same.
Keep myself to myself in the corner. I don't
get the lay of the land.
I'm not a competitive show off or anything. I'm not manufacturing out of insecurity. It's just my personality. So as soon as there's a room full of like, I'm quite happy just to sit with Lindsay and have a chat. And then once we were all friends, then I would show off and be.
Lindsay is your wife.
This is, yeah, my, okay. My beard, yeah.
but this
she's
is
my wife, inverted commas.
but that's probably because, isn't that because, weirdly enough, you're quite shy? Or you see, you're shy at the beginning. So and I always find this with people, like for myself, right? Everyone always thinks, oh, he's outgoing, things like that. Actually, weird enough, in big groups that people I don't know, I become quite shy.
Yeah.
But why is that? Why can you be so outgoing and then also be shy at the same time?
You've just got some introvert and extrovert. What are you like if you've got like a couple of nights off and it's just you in your flat chilling with Netflix? You're like, oh my God, I need people around me. Or do you quite enjoy your own
just
company?
Wanking.
apart from that, but do you enjoy your own company? I'm so happy on my own. Skipping around. There's a difference between solitude and loneliness.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of solitude. And I think if you've got some of those introvert traits, even if you're the biggest extrovert, once you're amongst friends or even in this sort of environment where I'm doing a podcast, you can go into that little insular bubble just because it's a safe feeling for me rather than a threatening feeling.
Yeah.
But where did everything start then? Because there has to be a moment in your life where suddenly you were literally like, right, I want to go and do comedy. Because it's like, freaking hell, it's like the biggest risk in the entire world. Like, Tom, you've just changed jobs, right? And so that's like a risk in general. But to go from starting something and going, right, I'm now going to... Because the only way to practice comedy is to do it in front of people. You can't just sit in a room and do it by yourself. So when did it start?
That's the other point I wanted to finish off, which relates to that, when you're saying about how I create a show. So say something funny happens here. Yeah. I walked in, I trod dog poo through the office, for example, and we were all like, oh my God, and I was dying of embarrassment. I would quickly write in my iPhone thing, like trod dog poo through a podcast, and just bank that.
Did you do that, actually?
No.
It's my natural odour.
No, but I never ever, and this is not, most comedians do not work like this. I have never ever sat down and gone, right, time to write up the dog pee routine. I'll start it with, oh my God, the other day. I just literally go on with one bullet point.
That's what I was going to ask you. So do you form the show off your first performance of that bit?
Yeah, when I'm doing a preview, I would just go on and try these three stories tonight, 20-minute set. I'm going to do the dog poo story. It might just be something that was only funny when we were here. It might not be funny at all. Mm. Or it might be gold. I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth, but I'll just tell the story as though I was telling you, like I'm telling you what happened on the way to the gig now. And so I just go on and I tell it.
Will you try it in a show or a specific?
At a comedy club where they know I'm turning up to do new material. I've got a notebook on the stage. Mm-hmm. And the bullet would only say, the time I tried dog food. That's all it would say. Mm. And then I would tell it, find me the laugh stop, then I would retell it. Same way evolution works, just gradually getting towards that
Refining,
but,
yeah.
But that's because you're way better just at ad-libbing, right? Because if you get given maybe a script, you're not as good, because then you have to go, okay, I have to do this and this. If you just have the bullet point saying dog pee, you go, fine. Because you're naturally just hilarious.
It just sounds too... It sounds too stilted, red. Yeah, it sounds too
But
rehearsed.
That's what I imagine it must be like if you're at a dinner party and you're telling a story that you've told before, you know, you make subtle changes to it to add some funny...
It's the same
and, you know,
skill,
add some pause. Yeah, exactly.
But with strangers.
Yeah.
Jamie, do you think you could do stand-up?
Yeah, I feel like I could do stand-up.
I think you definitely should have a stab. You should try. You should just do a five-minute set. Your problem you've got is you'd need to do it in the States
Why would I have to do it in the States?
Because if the audience have a perception of you when you go on, you got to get through that.
Yeah.
See, now I now have that. They have a perception of me as a comedian. So when I go on now, the audience divides into three. If I go on, it's great. But if I go on to a normal audience, surprise guest, we've got a comedian who's rocking up to try some stuff. Oh my God, isn't it Grimshaw? No, it's not, it's Russell Kane. And then I'll run on and the audience splits into three. I feel it every time. The first group is, oh my God, what a treat, I quite like your stuff. Middle group.
Second, is he gay?
No, middle group is, sorry, am I supposed to know who this is? Is this someone special? Never heard of you. Which is great, because that's what I trained on. Third group is, can't stand this cunt.
Yeah. No, it's not. Do they do that? Every single time.
Think how subjective humour is. So the third group is, I can't stand him. That's the group you're playing to, if you're any good. Yeah. That's the group you're playing.
You've got to try and persuade them, right?
And you get it a lot. You go, do you know what? I've always thought you were shit when I've seen you on TV. But tonight, you were quite good. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
May it be malignant.
But this is the thing. So what I want to try out in you, Russell, is, okay, fine, I feel like I should try out my stand-up. Right,
try out some jokes on Russell.
Yeah, okay, you ready? I wrote some jokes, Ellie. You want to hear them?
Okay. Let's hear it.
And also, do you know what, Russell?
Are all the punchlines going to be biscuits and...
No. No.
Jammy, Dodger?
Nah. But Russell, you probably don't know this, that comedy is all about timing.
Well, most things in life are about timing.
No, I'm making it hard for him. You were trying to speak over me.
No, here we go. You ready for this? Okay, so this is my stand-up. You ready?
Yeah, go.
I lost my job at a bank on my very first day.
Ah, you might get that.
Would you get that?
You might do, yeah, if you were going.
Why would you get that? Oh, because you stop and people go there.
You got into, I'm doing, you know, this is not about me, Jamie Lang. I'm in formal storytelling mode. Join me around the fire. You've immediately started in that register in your voice. You haven't gone, Russ, oh my God, it's not really stand-up, but the other day I was in the bank. You didn't do that.
You have to make conversational. Okay.
The other day, I lost my job. Oh,
gather all right, so I've got it. Here we go. So exactly, so you got to make it more conversational.
Well, it depends whether you're doing one-liners or whether you're going to go...
I was going to mix it up.
Well, got to mix it up then.
Okay, fine. Well, hey, okay, so here we go.
I'm coaching you, bro.
Russell, man, it's super annoying. Do you know why?
What happened? Sorry, I was drinking. I didn't have a stroke.
What? What happened?
Just get a fucking ambulance.
But just keep going on.
Can anyone else smell burning?
I love that Franz was actually smelling the air.
I was like, yeah, I can actually.
Right, here we go.
Sorry, let's go.
Okay, so Russell, I lost my job at my bank the other day.
No way, what happened?
Yeah, well, a woman asked me to check her balance, so I pushed her over.
It's good. It's a good joke. Is that one of yours, an original?
No.
Oh, you're plagiarising, aren't
you? No, not plagiarising. I'm not. Okay, fine, I got another one. Do you know what? I tried to sue the airport for misplacing my luggage. I lost my case.
Again, very good.
Yeah, technically a good joke.
What you should do is you should put all of your jokes into a spreadsheet. That way you can excel yourself. You thought I was giving you a genuine tip there, didn't you? And at the end, it was a joke.
That's turned on his head.
The way I used the voice.
Okay. All right, here we go. Do you know why...
That was one of mine.
Do you know why the coffee filed a police report?
Beans, something to do with beans, ground.
Ah, because it was mugged.
Marked. Oh. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. These are my jokes. Got one more for you.
Are they your jokes, though, Jake?
Yeah, they are. Here we go. Did you hear about the restaurant on the moon?
Go on.
Great food, no atmosphere.
Yeah. Again, they're good.
They're very good.
Do you know where I've heard they'd be quite good at a child's birthday party?
Yeah.
I remember I heard that when I was eight.
Yeah. Okay, Russell, fine then.
What about this? Ooh, it's all right. It's only glitter in a bucket.
What was that?
That was me being a clown. Careful I don't fall over, children. Ooh, ooh.
But Russell, okay, fine. What is your joke that you think is your funniest joke? Maybe not get the best laughs, but you're like, this is, for me, my funniest joke I've ever done, or story.
All laughs are equal, but there is a category difference between a joke, which is a thing I could pass to you, we could tell it to our friends and it's as funny, and something like I would do, which is, you know, a long story about my dad with this, and there's a bit at the end which no one else could tell.
Yeah.
So that's one's like a narrative humour. There's observational humour, which, yeah, anyone could tell, but you need the skill of a comedian to bring it to life, like Michael McIntyre. And then there's just your one-liners. Perhaps the most purest one-liner comedian is probably Tim Vine. He's one of the best, because that's what those jokes were. They were
just one-liners, which are technically quite boring because it's not changing up. Because my personal... what I like in comedy is when it's a narrative, right? When it's either observational humor or you have a narrative. That's what I kind of enjoy. But when it's like one-liners, I find it hard to keep engaged.
Depends how good they are.
Who's your favorite comedian? Who would you say is a comedian?
Daniel Kitson is probably the best. But he won't go on TV. You can't get tickets to see him. He doesn't advertise his shows. He's very purist about it.
Right. He's just like a ghost.
He just doesn't need to. He just puts them on his website and they sell.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of him.
Exactly, that's why. That's the way we want to keep it.
Yeah. Wait, hang on. So wait, did we? But,
yeah.
What about turning up?
Hello, Bobby Dingo and his dancing dog. He's absolutely magic. he's got this dog who has like a glitter bell around his neck. It's so funny. Yeah.
Who's your favourite comedian, Jamie?
My favourite comedian, apart from Russell Kane. You like that bit, didn't you?
It's nice.
It's not because you're here. Actually, I do love you.
It's the really angry one. He swears. Hell's Kitchen.
No,
cooking program again.
Do you know who I do? Do you know who I do really like? I do love Mickey Flanagan. I love him.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's good.
Now he's telling jokes and stories, but you feel like you don't do them justice when you retell them, which is the sign it's unique to him. But Tim Vine, if you want some good one-liners, family friendly, go to Tim Vine. He does things like Velcro, what a rip-off, jokes like that. Like, really good.
And do you know James Acaster?
Again, it's surreal, very, very creative.
He's very funny.
Slightly whimsical tangent.
But then also the person...
Everyone's brilliant in their own way.
For sure. But this is what I want to get down to. What made you want to do comedy at the beginning? Because you aren't a comedian at birth, right? You have to make that choice to become one. So what was the turning point for you?
Where I come from, time to get the violin out, straight the virus. Stand-up was not part of the cultural mix when I was growing up. It wasn't like, what do you want to do tonight, kids? I'll go pub, take away, or maybe we could go to the theatre. there was nothing. You watch telly when you get in from school, your mum and dad go out for a curry on a Saturday, and you might go to the pantomime at Christmas. And my only contact with stand-up when I was growing up was my dad watching Jim Davison or Jimmy Jones tapes and on DVDs, which is not necessarily my sense of humour. I've always had this personality, which is talking 100 miles an hour. Is he hyperactive? Had to fucking endocrine system tested because I'm so hyper. But everything's normal. I'm just...
Yeah, your just brain just goes 100 miles an hour, for sure.
So I never knew there was another use for it. I always knew I was going to be the first person in my family to go to university. I just knew I would get there. No one in my family's got an A-level. Right? So I was the first person to get an A-level, then the first person to go to university. And I managed to pick the one university in the land which didn't have a stand-up club, so I missed any contact with stand-up. Mm. So
Where'd you go?
Middlesex. It's because it was near where it was.
It was
near
quite near London, though.
That's why. The honest truth is, I got a place doing anthropology at one of the University of London colleges, and I got a place doing English with the option to do creative writing in it, and I thought, do I do the degree that looks better on paper, or do I do the one I know I will love for 3 years?
Yeah.
And it's closer to my nan who I was living with at the time. So I did that. Anyway, so I got out of uni and I was still the person that cracked jokes. I was able to make people laugh easily. It was just something I did without thinking, like someone who sings at home and hasn't joined the dots. And then when I started, got my first proper job, I was headhunted straight out of my degree into an ad agency. I was head copywriter. I was living the high life. And it was amazing. I went from undergraduate to head of copy in an ad agency in 18 months.
That's pretty impressive.
And that's because your mind is so creative, right? So
I love it. You just think of lines, puns, ideas. Yeah. So funny enough, McVitie's was one of our clients, genuinely was my client for about 2 years. Anyway, the creative planner at the office is like, you can just, the way you tell us like what happened in the pub last night, you've got people over there crying, laughing, you've added bits to it. You should go and do stand-up. You don't even realise you're doing it. Never until that moment.
Yeah.
Because I'm very, very nervous and not a fan of standing up in front of strangers and doing public speaking.
Yeah.
It had never occurred to me ever.
Yeah.
I was like, fine, what's my two stories I would tell to try and make strangers
And
laugh?
How old are you at this point?
28.
Okay, so yeah, exactly. So this is the thing. You're not 21 years old, right? And that's a lot of with most comedians. Like Mickey Flanagan, the same, was like 32, whatever.
Yeah.
So you were like, your two stories.
Well, you almost need perspective from a life and context to find things, you know, and actually to have stories
to
tell.
If you're doing my type of humour, you do, because it's about experience.
Yeah. So even your lack of contact with comedy in your upbringing where you grew up,
I think it did me a few favours.
Yeah, and probably was fertile ground for material that you could use in your...
It did me a favour because I'd had no influences. You know, I wasn't like jacking off over Bill Hicks and Chris Rock, like all the other white boys at university. Going, have you seen the Chris Rock? I was like, who the fuck's Chris Rock? I was reading Jane Austen. I was catching up, man. I've been to a comprehensive on a council estate.
Really?
So I was studying the literature, and then in the background, I was reading all the other canonical works I'd missed with my shit education. So I had to get everything. I'd read the French in translation. I'd read Flaubert, Zola, Balzac, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy. Everything during my degree.
Yeah.
I thought it was the most banal, pointless, mainstream thing. I had no TV. I only had a radio. I went through this phase. So it just never would have occurred to me. But, so of course, when I stood on stage, I didn't know you needed a punchline. I don't bother with them half the time. I just tell a really funny story, and sometimes at the end I go, and that's what happened. And they clap. Turns out you don't need one.
It's funnier, it's not.
Right.
So you finish the story and you go, and then we go, laugh. That's it. Don't know the last story.
Sometimes like there's a bit, and sometimes I go, and that's why my dad was a bastard, and I'll just put a functional topper on it or go on to the next story.
but then when you were 28 years old in that office and you were like, right, what am I... So they said, you should do stand-up. So then what happened next?
So this has not been romanticised in any way. So you speak to a lot of stand-ups and they'll be like, I always knew, you know, I always used to watch Bill Hicks. I used to dress as a clown and grey. I'd had none of that. I had a complete disrespect and lack of interest in stand-up. I was just doing it the same way you might say to me, do a bungee jump, bro. It's amazing. Just do it. And I'd be like, fuck it. I only live once. It was that attitude. So I went on the computer.
Father's got balls.
I went on the computer at work and I was like, stand-up comedy, London. And clicked the first link and phoned the first number. It was July, and it was a comedy cafe in Rivington Street. And I phoned them. I was like, "How do you, if you've never done stand up?"
They must have had good SEO back then.
And I said, "How do you try it out for the first time?" And they was like, "Right, all the comedians are in Edinburgh at the moment, so you're in luck. Come down 2 Wednesdays' time." I was like, "What do you mean Edinburgh?" I had never, until that moment, thought Edinburgh was anything other than the stuff I was interested in, you know, opera, plays, literature. I didn't understand. I sort of vaguely knew Perrier Award and all that stuff. It was there in the corner, but I never looked at it. So that's what I did. I went to the gig. It was one of my worst experiences of fear of my life. I mean, I must have eaten a box of Imodium. It had no effect. I was honestly on the toilet.
Getting drunk before? No.
No. Holding the mic, hand shaking, and just the most scary thing you'll ever do, your first comedy gig.
Yeah, but it's also the most exhilarating experience because for you, right, Russ, I imagine that as soon as you get that laugh, and for you, you can feel the... Because you're like that energy person, like all of us, so you can feel the energy.
Absolutely.
As soon as you have that audience, you're literally like, fuck, I've got them, here we go.
So the first gig was neither one nor the other. It wasn't disastrous and it wasn't amazing. I just got two... decent laughs, not what's called an applause break, which is where they laugh and go, that's fucking brilliant. I just got two decent laughs, and because my whole life after that fell apart, like career wise, just was a disaster. My whole brilliant career just started to go downhill because I got obsessed with this.
Related to the
stand up.
Yeah.
I'm going to Manchester after work on a Wednesday. I'm head of copy. I'm handling McVitie's, Vodafone, Carlsberg.
You're fucking off to Manchester.
GlaxoSmithKline, Procter & Gamble, massive clients, big pitches, working weekends. And I'm like saying, I've got to leave for a doctor's appointment, going up to Manchester, getting in at 3 a.m. Anyway, this first gig. When I was younger, there was this anti-heroin campaign, and it showed the needle going in and the poison going into the veins, and the line was, you'll feel sick at first, but you'll come back for more.
I remember that.
Exactly what it was like. I knew this was going to completely overtake my life. I literally would throw up and have diarrhea if I went on stage. I was losing weight. My job was going down the pan. I split up with my girlfriend. but I couldn't. I just couldn't stop.
Mm. But do you think? Do you think that's because?
Crazy.
Do you think that's because you have that addictive personality? Do you think
not at all? I've never been addicted to anything in my life apart from wanking, of course, which all men are addicted to. Even in the nursing home, just osteoporosis hand being maneuvered.
I'm not even kidding. When I was younger, and I did sex education at school. I was about 12.
Where are you going with this?
I basically found out about wanking, so I was wanking, right? And I was then all thought I was doing it too much. So when I was doing a sex ed, I was always going like, can you wank too much? I was always so concerned that you could over wank.
Yeah. That sentence really rang through your head in Casualty a couple of months later as you bled from the helmet.
Right, Russell.
But the point is, I don't think you could call it an addiction. It was more like falling in closer to, you know, when you fall in love with someone when you're 16 and you're just like,
needy
on the floor. And there was no time left in my day. When you're doing something like advertising, there is no spare time. So every gap and crevice was filled with stand-up, which meant I split up with Lorraine, my girlfriend at the time, and over a period of 2 years, the job started to suffer. And I'd reached unimaginable heights in 18 months. It was really responsible. My mum was furious.
My mum's
a cleaner. She scrubbed toilets all these years, and here's me, you know, living in Clapham, dips in the fridge, like coming up with headlines on bright coloured couches, living the middle class dream, and throwing it into jeopardy on some ego trip, like some X Factor twat.
Well, you got to take risks.
Dude, yeah. I love that. Listen, also, Russell, what we do at the end of part one is Francis gives us a question of the week. So he gives us a question of the week every single time, and we have to try and answer it. So, Francis, why don't you give us the question of the week?
How many... Well, this is a random one. How many letters can a standard US Postal Service mailbox hold at any one time?
Are you for real?
What?
Do you mean where you send the post from?
Yeah, no. The blue post box that you see them on the street.
How many letters?
How many letters? Yeah,
they're quite short.
Approximately.
God,
how many letters? What the fuck? I have no idea.
You mean how many pieces of mail, not how many?
Okay, all right. Okay,
individuals.
Okay, all right. Okay, let's scrap that one. You can have a guess.
700.
Okay, so you're going to say 700?
700?
700?
Well, I'm going to go near you. That means 580.
Okay, Tom?
I'm going to get 800.
Okay, so that's the first one. We'll have another one just because that was a bit of a rogue one.
Okay.
A Belgian post box. It's welcome to Francis's post box questions. Today
they're actually all about post
boxes. We're in the former Yugoslavian Republic of Macedonia. It's an interesting fact there. Yellow post boxes. So let's see
it's true.
Exactly what the volume is. It's like the secret. It's like the bad boy to Portillo's train journeys. It's Francis's post box.
There are a lot of interesting facts about post boxes.
Someone's pitched it somewhere.
I'm Michael Portillo, and today I'm joined by Francis.
Actually, speaking of post boxes, when I was younger, I lived on the beach in Florida.
Yeah, we all.
Sort of, yeah, 11 or 12. And we used to, as a popular...
What a different life you've led.
...pastime, I used to have these... There were these bangers, big bangers called, like, M80s or whatever. And we used to go around and put them in people's, like, elaborate, like, post... You know, like their mailboxes, and just, like, stand back, ring the doorbell and watch them blow up.
Fantastic.
Is that what you used to do?
Yeah.
I thought the story was going somewhere else. You're obsessed with mailboxes.
No, blowing up mailboxes.
People often destroy what they're obsessed with.
Yeah. it's a love-hate relationship.
Sometimes I just want to hurt them.
Okay, give us our question, Francis.
Do you know how many heartbeats a hummingbird has in a minute?
How many heartbeats a hummingbird has in a minute? Okay, Russell, you're the guest. You go first.
We're going to have to correlate it to wing beat, right? It seems like it would make sense. Like you'd need one sort of pump around the body for each flap of wing. That doesn't really help us.
No, not really.
Unless you can count these. I'm going to go with 20. I'm going to go with what's 30 times 60?
1,000.
I'm going to go with 1,000. I'm going to go about 1,000 beats a minute.
Okay.
1,000 beats
just based on. That's for 5 seconds.
Okay. All right. Tom?
Go. I'm going to get 800.
800. I'm going to go more. I'm going to go like 4,000.
4,000.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
All right. Well, I will tell you the answer to both of those questions in part two.
Okay, and to all of our listeners, please stick around because we still have the Russell Gain for part two. We're going to hear the answer to the question of the week. And also, we have Francis's diary.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't have a diary this week?
No, I've already read it out.
All right. Is it going to feature postboxes, your diary?
Do you know what? We'll see.
See you in part two.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.